Good morning. Thank you, Becky, for leading us this morning in our praise and worship together. I was reflecting that in that song we were singing, that Jesus, the undefeated champion of the world, that actually, as we work through our teaching this morning, I think we're going to find that some of these things we're going to be talking about today, the formation of the Jesus communities that came out of the gospel, a part of the reason why Jesus has been such a powerful force in this world down the history of the ages. So what we're going to be looking at today goes very close to those truths authority of Jesus in our world and the way that Jesus has chosen to work in our world. Right, well, can I come back to that later? We're going to start with a video. This is a Honda Civic advert from 2006. Enjoy it.
This is what a Honda feels like.
Try clicking it on to keep playing, but it will go. Oh. Tell you what. Alex.
Yeah.
If you want us to go onto YouTube and look at the Honda Civic advert, we might get it from there and see the rest of it. I don't know why it cut that off. I tried to download it so it wouldn't be cutting out midstream, but yeah. Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Yep, fantastic. Right, okay, so we will see it through because I think it's brilliant. It's just an incredible picture of people working together, isn't it? I mean, that choir being trained to make all those noises, and it really is. It's extraordinary what they achieve. By way of contrast, Marion and I had one of the top groups at the Holiday Club this week. We had a group which had probably half its members would be classified as informal leaders. You know, 9, 10, 11-year-old leaders. You know what I mean? Pardon? I know, but that's what I'm saying. I'm talking about informal leaders. I'm talking about people who have strong opinions, verbally confident. If you introduce a game, there is at least between 9 of them 12 ways of running the game. By Thursday, I said to Marion, "We dare not ask, what do you want to do?" We just have to know what they're going to do. We dare not ask or suggest that we're unsure at all about any rule in any game. This is where we're going to play it, and any objection to that, and in fact, even when we had clear rules, it was they were always contested. It's an interesting situation. Now, this is the opposite of that. This is a group of people working together. Try again. amazing? Isn't that amazing? I should add that the group we had was wonderful. They were lovely. There was nothing malicious at all. They were just wonderfully full of energy, and we really enjoyed it. But what you can achieve when you can cooperate together well is extraordinary, isn't it? And a group of people like that, there's a high level there of coordination and of working together and of team and of following a lead and of producing something together which is beautiful. And this morning's passage is all about that. So thank you, Alex. Let's have a look at this morning's scripture together. So let's read this. Actually, before we read, can I just give you the context of where we're at in our term since Easter? We've been really focusing since Easter on one way or another fellowship, on being God's people together. So we started this session looking at Ruth, which is just a beautiful book about intimacy. And it's the intimacy between this daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law and how there was a loyalty and a commitment to each other and what God achieved through that. Then we had a series on hospitality. And then we've moved in for this last period of the session through to the end of August, where we're looking at 1 Thessalonians, which has to be, I would think, Paul's most intimate letter. As you read through 1 Thessalonians, there's a closeness and an intimacy there and a sense of personal commitment there that I'm sure is true with his other churches, but there's something very, very, very immediate and evident in this book. And this little passage here towards the end of Thessalonians is one of those places where he's speaking about their relationships together. And so let's read these through. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord, and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard in love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. And we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle, disruptive. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to take this in three headings. There's leaders, there's limitations, and there's legitimate grievances. To do with leaders, there is how we recognize our leaders and how we treat them. To do with limitations, there's how we handle the various limitations each of us carries into fellowship and how we work together with each other's limitations. And then in terms of legitimate grievances, how we avoid revenge becoming a part of our life together. How we avoid paying back evil for evil. So let's have a little look at leaders. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, 12 to 13, the chapter's missing from there. The first two verses of what we've read is where we're going to be focusing here. If you read through the account of Paul and his journeys through Acts, you'll know that on his very first missionary journey, Paul went up through Asia Minor and he encountered various problems and saw numbers of people saved. And then on his way back through Asia Minor, back to the coast, you see him appointing elders in the churches he goes back through. So we know that Paul certainly knew about church structure and appointing leadership in churches. But this church in Thessalonica is a very young church. Just remember how it came into being, that Paul was there for a short time and he started the church and then he got driven out, basically, from Thessalonica. There was persecution there and he got driven out. And it would appear that he hadn't actually established that leadership in that place. Maybe he hadn't time. Maybe the church hadn't had time to form in that way. Paul then goes on down the coast of I was going to say the coast of Greece. Of course, the north part of that wasn't Greece at that point. It was Macedonia. So down Macedonia, then down into Greece. And he goes through Berea and has to run away. He goes into Corinth, into Athens, and then he moves on there to Corinth. And it's at Corinth that he's writing back to the Thessalonians. I don't know what the time span is, but it's not long. Maybe a year, don't know. I couldn't find any reference to somebody who's worked out exactly what they felt the timing was, but it's not that long. This church hasn't existed for that long. And it's coming to grips with what it is to be a church. It's learning who the different characters are within that church. It's learning how to be this people of God in this place where there haven't been any Christians before and where nobody around them are Christian, and they're just learning what is it to be this new people of faith in this place. And Paul wants to address this business of how they look at one another and how they work together. And the first thing has to do with leadership. So if you give me another click, please. He asked them to acknowledge, or to, literal translation, that is to know those who, thank you, who do three things. Who work hard amongst you, who care for you, and who instruct you. The word you've got there for instruct in the NIV is, I think it's admonish, isn't it? It doesn't have to be negative in the sense of admonish. It feels like a little bit of a rebuke. It's instruction, and that can involve the challenge and the rebuke, of course, but it's instruction. One up, thank you. how are they to identify those they should be looking up to? They're the people who work hard amongst them. They're the people who care for them. Now, care for them, that word involves a sense of leadership, of protecting, of caring. Who is it, Paul's saying? Who amongst you have you seen has worked hard? Who amongst you has seen has been that person who's cared for you in the sense of protecting you and leading you as a group? And who is it who's been instructing you? Incidentally, for those who wish to know, these are all participles with one definite article, so it means this is not three groups of people, this is one group of people who do these three things. They work hard, they care, and they instruct. Now, what I want you to notice, please, thank you, is that it's the action rather than the office that counts. For those who the church notes as leaders, who it looks up to as its leaders, it's not those who have had some sort of badge put on them. You're the priests of this church, or you're the elders of this church, or you're whatever. These are people who, over the course of whatever it is, months, year, maybe whatever, the church has seen this one, that one, this one, those little kids in our group who are those natural leaders. These ones amongst us, these are the ones, they're rolling their sleeves up. They're working because they want this church to progress. They're caring for us. They're looking after our needs. They're helping to protect us in this dangerous world. They're teaching us. And what Paul says is those people, make sure you respect them. Make sure you respect them. It's interesting, isn't it? Even there, he doesn't actually appoint them. He doesn't. We don't have a record here of Timothy being told to go and appoint certain people as the leaders. But what Paul is saying is, you know who are leading amongst you. Now just get on and respect them. Respecting leadership is part of what's going on with that beautiful choir. That whatever the gifts and abilities of the individual members, there has to be somebody who can help hold that together. Somebody has to write the script. Somebody has to envision how it will be. Somebody has to train the different individuals in what they need to do. Somebody has to then conduct it to make it work together on the occasion. There are these various roles that make the individuals make something much bigger and more beautiful than the parts can do. And those people, they should be affirmed. And there's plenty in scripture about that. Does that make sense? And as I look around the church here, I see leaders who have formal roles who work wonderfully. And I see other people who quietly lead in the other ways, who get on and do stuff. And as you see people doing those things around the life of the church, just thank them, affirm them in what they're doing amongst us and the lead they're giving in the fellowship here, informal or formal. Okay, I want to move on to the next little part of the text then, which is to do with limitations. So we have in that scripture that we read, and we urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. Now, apologies that I haven't got lots of beautiful pictures for you today, or illustrations on our thing, but let's just use these words and have a think about some of them. Yes, please. Please note that that verse starts with a call to brothers, or in the NIV, brothers and sisters, that this isn't addressed to the leaders. This is something we're holding each other accountable for as a church, that we all can speak into each other's lives about these different things, whether it's those things to do with those bits of challenge, all those things to do with those bits of encouragement. And there's something very powerful, isn't it, when it's the body that's doing it and we're encouraging each other. And it's not just simply a few who hand down that lead. So let's work through some of the points. So the first one is the idle and disruptive. There are two words there. There is one word in the text. That one word can be translated in those two different ways as idle and disruptive. So fair enough, the NIV has gone for two words. It's one of those words which starts with an "ah," which means it's a negative. And the rest of the word is about being in line or being in order. So these are people who are not in line. People who are not in order. That's what the word means. I don't know how many of you feel you're the sort of people who are not in line. I guess there's something in our culture which prides being out of line and disruptive, the irritant in the mix. It would be a bit of a shame in that choir if somebody had started to sing Wandering Star or something in the middle, wouldn't it? But there you go. But sometimes the beauty gets spoilt by that person. But nevertheless, there is a sense that there is a due role for me to fulfill because I have a calling. And there's a due role for each of you to fulfill because of your calling in the life of the church. There's something that you're given to do by God in the way he's made you, in the way he gifts you. And if we're not doing that thing, we're out of our area of commission. We're out of what we're commissioned to do. We're out of line. We're not doing that thing. And the church suffers. Or maybe it's more deliberate than that. Maybe it's that thing which is actually positively disruptive, that we work against what the church is trying to do. Now, it's interesting. Of those, the headings that we've got in this passage, the four words we have in this one verse, this is the only negative. It's that willful action that says, I will not do that thing that I'm supposed to do for this church or in the life of the church. I will not be that dependable person who will do the thing that the church is depending on me to do. I'm going to be the person who will maybe drop out and leave the hole for no good reason. There are plenty of good reasons for dropping out. Things happen to us in life, and that's understandable. But you know the sort of thing which happens. This person is somebody who just needs to be spoken to and asked to be reminded that the church needs each of us to pull our weight. Okay, that's a negative. Now we've got some lovely positives. Next one. Now, you have the words in the NIV, encourage the disheartened. Where does your mind go to when that's said? I know where my mind went to. Encourage has, within the English language, that sense of giving courage. And disheartened has that sense within our language of being somebody who is perhaps fearful and knocked off their stride. And so as I began to prepare my thoughts about this particular phrase, I was thinking, yes, of course, this church, there was plenty of reason why they should be fearful and knocked off their stride. They've experienced some persecution, not very nice. They've seen their leader being kicked out of the town. You know, Chris has gone on his holidays, but what if I stood up here this morning and say, Chris isn't here because a mob turned up his house yesterday and said, get out of town because we don't want you preaching the gospel anymore. How would we feel then? You know, we'd be nervous, wouldn't we? And that's with this number of us, if it's just a small group, and the person who's come has been kicked out in that violent way. But you know, I've discovered that this is a much bigger picture, and you're going to learn some Greek words, okay? Can you say the Greek letter psi? Yeah, can you say that word? The ps, it's a and psukos, can you say psukos? That's if you like, life, breath, spirit, psukos. Yes, psukos? Right. Can you say, go oligopsukos? Oligos psukos, okay? Oligos psukos, right? Oligos psukos? Oligos psukos? Yes, got it? Right. What does oligo mean? Where have you heard that kind of word before? Oligarchy. What's an oligarchy? Pardon? It's ruled by a small number, yeah? So oligo means small. So actually, this word literally means small-spirited. Okay, small-spirited. Yeah? Now, this contrasts with Aristotle's picture of the ideal man. And the ideal of man is megapsukos. Can you say megapsukos? So you've got megapsukos. So you've got the ideal man who knows how much he's worth and says so. You know, you want to know why there's so many naked men riding around on horses in Greek art, because their leaders wanted to show what perfect specimens they were. And they would strip off and bestride their horses and ride through and say, look how wonderful I am. You know, this is part of the ancient Greek culture. And becomes a little bit embarrassing, really, but there you go. You have to be very careful how you frame your photographs when you're in Greece. Please just stand there. Yes, a little bit further across. Thank you. Yes. There was that vaunting of wealth and power and grandeur. And for poor old Aristotle, there was the other sort of people. And he didn't use the word oligos psukos. He used the word micropsukos. Micros, tiny spirited. And he wasn't sympathetic towards tiny spirited people. They were pathetic. Yeah? So, guys, don't be tiny spirited, Aristotle would have said. Know how wonderful you are and proclaim it to the world. And then you get Jesus coming along and he gets born into a stable, not into the emperor's palace. And he lives as a peasant and he wins a crowd of peasants. And you get him dying on a cross, a criminal's death. And you get shepherds being the witnesses of his birth. You get a bunch of just nobodies witnessing his resurrection. And then you get Paul preaching the gospel, and Paul will say at the beginning of Corinthians, there are not many amongst us who are noble. Do you know, this phrase, encourage or comfort the little spirited, is a great word to all of us. You may not feel frightened today. It's not faint-hearted. This is for all of us who feel, you know, God, I haven't really got much to give. I'm not a very big person. I haven't got a particularly big trumpet to blow or a big drum to hit. I'm just me with the few things I have to offer. And what God says to us is, that's what my kingdom's made of. It's that hymn, an army of ordinary people. You know, it's that choir These aren't opera singers who are singing the solo. They're just doing little things like this and little actions, and they're making that beautiful sound. That's what we're supposed to be, brothers and sisters. And our job together is to say to each other, you're fantastic. You bring what you've got to bring and you put it into the pot. And I'll bring what I have to bring and I'll put it into the pot. And we'll respect each other and we'll build each other and we'll do something fantastic as a whole. Isn't that great? So I think this is a much bigger phrase than just, you may be feeling frightened, let me help you not be frightened. This is about feeling little. And God saying, actually, but you have a part in my kingdom purposes. And I think quite similarly, he then says, help the weak. Thank you, Alex. And, you know, where the weak come up often in the New Testament, in Paul's writing, is about weak in faith. And some of us probably feel quite weak in faith. And the Old Testament talks about the Messiah, when he comes, he won't break the smouldering flax. He'll make it strong. You know that God's purpose isn't to snap off the thing that's weak, but to make it strong. And again, if you're sitting here with weak faith this morning, if I'm standing here with weak faith this morning, that's fine. Jesus said, faith as small as a mustard seed. Let's encourage each other and grow each other's faith. And then, as a final statement, just to take the whole lot up together, everyone. What have you got to do with everyone? Be patient with everyone. Very good advice. And just about every one of us have probably made just about every one of us here impatient at some point, probably in fellowship. And I mean, that's life together, isn't it? We're family. And if you're around each other for any length of time with any depth of relationship, there will be points when you have not felt very patient with each other. And all with me. And Paul says, just be patient, because actually there's a much bigger fish to fry here than simply your own gratification or what you're going to achieve. It's about building this Jesus community that can show something very different in this world from the norm out there. I wonder who we would picture in our political scene as being mega psychoses, and who we would see as amongst our leadership as small in their projection of their spirit. I wonder in our Christian life, in our Christian church communities, who we see as the big Christian leaders, and those who we just see as those who faithfully hand the faith on. You know, there's a place, isn't there, within God's kingdom for those who need to take some sort of a bigger lead and be visible. But the bread and butter business of the church goes on by people who stay in line, they do their job, they don't disrupt the apple cart, they do their job, and it may be a small job, but they do it well. They may not feel they've got a lot to bring, but they do that well. They may feel weak in faith, but they put what faith they've got into their work of Christ. And we hold together because we just stay patient with each other. What a beautiful picture, isn't it? Yeah. And then we've got the last verse of our text this morning. And it's verse 15. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what is good for each other and for everyone. You know, this takes you very close to probably the heart of Christian ethics, doesn't it? That business of loving your enemy. If there's anything which marks out the extraordinary quality of the Christian ethic, it's that call to love the enemy. Most of the world simply does not understand it. They think it's foolish and irrational. And our God tells us that we must love our enemies. You know, and we've got to leave vengeance to God, and we need to forgive. You know, that phrase that Paul used, forgive as the Lord forgave you. What have I been forgiven? Again, in fellowship, there are ample reasons over the course of months and years and decades of living and working together as Christians in fellowship for falling out and for having grievances for this, that, or the other. And God says, just don't pay it back. Don't pay it back. Instead, do that person good. Instead, do that person good. Let's have a look at some of the teaching of Jesus on this one. Matthew chapter 5:44. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. You love them and you pray for them. You love them and you pray for them, those who persecute you. Don't just try and stop hating them, but you love them and you do something positive. You pray for them. Peter asking Jesus about forgiveness in Matthew 18. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister? Actually, that would have been quite a good, interesting one to do for a Power Pack week, isn't it? Wouldn't it? How many times shall I forgive my brother and sister? Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And that generosity of forgiveness. And again in Luke, that call to love our enemies. In Luke chapter 6:27, it says, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. That's an amazing call, isn't it? That I'm called as a Christian person, a follower of Jesus, to do good to the person who hates me. Verse 35, but love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Now that passage, just before that verse, it says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Now, some of you might have seen me diving over things at various points. Diving over a chair and doing a front roll. And it was about this verse. This is the trouble with some of these illustrations you do, that people can remember the illustration, but they haven't a clue what it's about. And the thing was, the whole point was that if I just walk across the stage, nobody claps, because everyone can walk across the stage. But you clap something which is a bit outstanding, don't you? And Jesus said, if all I can do is love the people who love me, so what? What marks you and me out as God's people? I love the people who don't love me. There's nothing remarkable about loving people who love me. What's remarkable is loving people who don't love me. And that's what God did for us. He forgave me. He died for me whilst I was still a sinner. Not when I turned to him. Whilst I was still a sinner, Christ died for me. And then he says, James, I've died for you. Come and receive it. And let me do some work in you. And he says that to each of us this morning. He said, I've died for you to take your sin away. You may be running away from me. You may be ignoring me. You may not want me. You may be off wanting to do your own thing, whatever that might mean for other people and yourself. But Jesus said, but I have died for you. That's done. And all I want you to do is now come and receive it. In this is love, not that I love God, but that he loved me and gave himself for me. 1 John. My love for God is always a response to his goodness. God's love for me is something given before I'd given him anything. This is our calling as Christian people. Okay. So legitimate grievances. I can't remember what I put up there. Revenge. Oh, yes. Keep going. Okay. That's fine. That's what we've been through. We're supposed to model a better way. We're supposed to model a better society, a society that is different. Okay. Let's have the closing screen then. This last chapter I've titled The Gospel Lived, and it's in several sections, and it's working. This part is working together. Carry on, please, Alex. How do we live the Christian life in community? Number one, recognize the right leaders for the right reasons and then respect them. Number two, work with each other's limitations. Accept the willfully disruptive. Okay? And there they just need to be corrected. Follow the path of love, no revenge, but doing good. Going good. Mistyping there, doing good. Okay, is there one more line? Alex, is that it? That's it. Okay. Right, I did a little experiment on Friday to close the holiday club, in a holiday club closing activity, to talk about Wow Science coming up. And I was going to bring it today, and I clean forgot it yesterday, and I haven't brought it with me. Because I thought it was brilliant. If you take a glass and you put some vinegar in it, and you put some bicarbonate of soda in that, it bubbles and froths. And what it's generating is carbon dioxide. And you can't see the carbon dioxide. The glass will fill with carbon dioxide. It's denser than air, so it'll stay. It's heavier than air, so it'll stay there. If you get a candle, you can't see the carbon dioxide, but you can just pour the gas over the candle and it'll put the candle out. It just goes out because you're taking away all the oxygen, you're covering it with carbon dioxide. It just goes out. You know, anything that disrupts the fellowship puts out our light. That's the prize. Christ wants us to burn for him in this world. Christ wants us to be a light in this world. And anything we allow to be divisions or breaks or disrespect within our fellowship and one another is just like taking that invisible gas. You can't see it. It goes... And sometimes you feel it in the fellowship. You walk into fellowship, you think, dear me, this doesn't feel right. There's something wrong here. And it's just because there are bad feelings. And other times you walk into fellowship and you think, wow, there's a real feeling of togetherness and buzz here. And it's because generally the relationships and the quality of respect is good. Brothers and sisters, take this passage, give each other respect and love, build each other up, hold each other in whatever the giftings we bring, whether we feel they're big or small, they're important to God and important to the work of his church. Do what it is that God has put you in line to do. Be that person who's in line in the sense of fulfilling your calling and your commission. Amen.